Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
When you used to go to the physician back in the 60s and 70s, the first question that you would ask your patient is, how can I help you? Now, the first question you as a patient are asked is, what insurance do you have?
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, always eager to share an hour with you to help keep you safe during every healthcare or hospital encounter. You just heard a snippet from today's guest, a physician, author, who has written several books. His most recent is about Obamacare with the question, have things improved in the last 6 years? This is taken from my author interview series that I do for my online radio network called Speak Up Talk Radio. So you'll hear me talk about that station when I introduce today's guest. And when you have a moment, visit that website for about 50 unusual podcast topics from Doggy Diva to the Holistic Entrepreneur. Plus, that's where you'll find some fascinating interviews I've had with authors from around the country. If you like to read and are looking for some special books and topics, visit speakuptalkradio.com. That's speakuptalkradio.com. So our guest is going to pose the question, has healthcare improved since the advent of the misnomer, the Affordable Care Act? And then he offers his suggestions for a solution. And let me just say ahead of time that his solution is not necessarily my solution, but hey, I'm the interviewer, not the guest. What do you think? Has healthcare improved since Obamacare arrived? Personally, I don't think it has, and I'm involved in the system, not only as a researcher, a radio host, a writer, and a speaker, but also as a user. My mom has a healthcare encounter almost on a daily basis, so I get to see firsthand how it goes. And that is how I'd like to begin our program today. So let's get going, because right now it's time for the healthcare hazards of the week. Last week, my mom had to have an outpatient procedure done called thoracentesis to remove the fluid from the space between the lungs and the chest wall. It is done with a needle and a plastic catheter inserted through the chest wall under ultrasound guidance, and within seconds, voila, out pours what looks like a Guinness stout beer on tap with a nice head of foam, which the doctor told me was protein. Well, I got to stay in the room to watch the entire procedure, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Here's how it started. Mom was getting out of breath again, so the cardiologist said it was time to get the pleural space drained. Now, this is becoming old hat, as she's had it done 4 times in the past 2 years. So the gal who cares for my mom called the hospital to make the outpatient appointment with the same doctor who has done it each and every time. When she confirmed with the nurse while making the appointment that it was to be scheduled with the same doctor, the nurse replied, "Oh, well, he's the only one here that does that procedure." "Cool. Then we're set. Your appointment is at 1 o'clock, but be here at noon or earlier to do lab work." So on Thursday, I took mom, lugging this ridiculously heavy oxygen tank with one hand while trying to navigate mom in the wheelchair with the other, a purse and a bag of medications. All wheels choose to go in all directions but straight. And oh, did I mention that it was raining? Oh, by the time we got to radiology, I was soaked and worn out. But that's okay. It only adds to the full experience. Well, they whisked us into the lab to take blood, and by 12:05, we were done, left to sit and wait until 1 o'clock. Not sure why we had to be there a full hour early, but whatever. So we sat and had to listen to the blasting television on the wall, an infomercial with Jane Seymour talking about the revolutionary life-changing skin cream called Crepey Race. Do you have crepey skin? Then you need Crepey Race, $59.95, but call within the next 30 seconds and it's yours for only $39.95. Plus, we'll throw in a bottle of this and a jar of that. And then 3 commercials in a row. talking about medical malpractice. Do you know what the third leading cause of death is? That's right, it's medical errors. If you've been harmed by a medical error, call Borowitz, Horowitz, and no Morowitz. And then the next one, harmed by pelvic mesh implant, call Moose and Moose. And finally, if you've used the antibiotics Avalox, Cipro, or Levaquin and later developed peripheral neuropathy, nerve damage, and serious eye damage, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Call now. And then back to Crepe Erase. My life has been improved since using Crepe Erase. I'm happy. I'm fulfilled. My skin is glowing. Finally, I love myself. Oh, whoa. Who knew that a skin cream could do all that? Wow. And during that hour of filling my brain with useless nonsense, I watched as the gal across from me got more and more agitated and vocal. She was there for a CAT scan, and when the nurse came over with her two big bottles of liquid prep for her to drink, the gal asked her in a tone that quickly escalated to a loud and irritated pitch, "Did you find my blood test results? Because I had my blood drawn on Tuesday at the lab across the street from where I work, and I called them, and they verified that they sent the results to you on Wednesday at 12:15. I called again today, and they assured me that you have them." The nurse looked unfazed. "No, we don't have them. But don't worry. We can draw blood again right now." The gal jumped out of her seat. "No, you don't understand. This happens every time I come here. You never have my blood test results, and I'm not going to do another blood draw today. Why don't you just call the lab and ask them to resend?" The nurse, once again, straight-faced. "We don't have the number." "Well, you should have the number. Look at my chart from last time, and you'll find their number on the bottom of my test results." Straight-faced replied, "We don't have access to your chart, but I'll go see what I can find." And off she trotted, never to return. Meantime, this poor gal called home and asked her kids to scrounge around the kitchen counter to try to locate the lab's phone number. And this went on until Mom was called for her procedure at about 1:15. Talk about the patient experience. Obviously, this happens to this gal each and every time she gets a CAT scan. Where do her pre-exam blood results go? Does the hospital fax machine empty into a garbage can? And what's up with the staff? No one attempted to help this woman. And with all the hubbub about electronic medical records revolutionizing healthcare, making access to your records just one click away, from what I've experienced, it seems like as we move from provider to provider across the healthcare continuum, no one ever has any records or access to my mom's records. If it wasn't for her or me dragging our medication list and previous test results with us, no one would ever know anything, because the answer I continue to receive is the same that the poor CAT scan gal heard. "We don't have access to your chart." I say phooey and hooey. Now, as the nurse was wheeling Mom to the procedure room, she announced, "Dr. New Guy will be doing the procedure today." I brought the wheelchair and the massive oxygen tank, purse and meds, to a screeching halt. "Oh, we have an appointment with Dr. Usual, as usual." "Oh, no, he's on vacation. But Dr. New Guy, he's very good." Well, just so happens that Dr. New Guy overheard this in the hallway and came trotting in. "Oh, if you don't want me to do it, can you wait till Monday?" "Oh, what?" First of all, I've never heard of a surgeon giving away a chance to make a cut or a buck. And secondly, can we wait? I don't know. Can we? Then the nurse told what I am sure is a flat-out lie. She said, "Oh, no, you have to have it done today. Your cardiologist has called me 3 times this morning to make sure that you're having it done." Come on, people. Do I really believe that the cardiologist who sees 100 people in a day actually stopped what he was doing to call around to make sure Mom was having a thoracentesis done today? 3 times? I'm a lot of things, but stupid isn't one of them. Now, my mom was seriously annoyed by this, but considering that she couldn't even catch a breath, she was stuck with the new guy, and stuck she was. As I watched him make several attempts to insert the catheter unsuccessfully, I was 1 nanosecond away from saying, "We're out of here." But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. What transpired before he poked around between her ribs several times was quite shocking to me. The nurse was in the room. Another gal, whose role I could not determine as she didn't bother to introduce herself, and so was the doctor. Mom asked, "What side are you going to drain?" Everyone looked around with puzzled eyebrows. The nurse said, Well, I don't remember. We see so many people, I can't possibly remember what side they did last time. The no-name nurse looked glassy-eyed, and the doctor said, I think I read it was the right side. The nurse kept going on and on about how she couldn't and shouldn't be expected to remember what happened 3 months ago, until finally the voice for patient safety suggested, oh, and that would be me, why don't you look at her chart? What does the chest x-ray show? So the no-name nurse wandered out and returned. It's the right side. Now, whether she actually went somewhere to look at Mom's chart or whether she went to the bathroom, I don't know. But wouldn't you expect, with all of the amazing and blazing radiation-emitting rolling carts of wireless computers that blast through the hospital, that Mom's chart wouldn't be right there in the room for some accurate consultation? Between the bait and switch of doctors, with the nurse telling Mom's caretaker the usual doctor is the only doctor who does this procedure, to no one knowing what side to drain, to several painful attempts by Dr. New Guy to locate the space between the ribs, I realized once again, nothing is changing. In fact, things may be getting worse. And how ironic that I was forced to watch Crepe Erase that I heard 3 medical malpractice commercials talking about the very same things we talk about here on this program. Medical errors are the 3rd leading cause of death in the United States. Well, in an hour's time, I saw some very real indications of why this happens. A gal's blood test results that never seem to find their way to the hospital. Nurses telling lies when making the appointment that your doctor is the only one who does this procedure and then booking with someone else. Faking reassurance that the cardiologist was on speed dial all morning out of concern. Staff not knowing at the point of needle insertion what side was correct. No access to medical charts. We were lucky, and I use that word on purpose. With all of the circus-like behavior going on, we were lucky that all went well. Now, I've talked about this new statistic about medical errors before. A recent Johns Hopkins study shows that medical errors in hospitals and other healthcare facilities are incredibly common and may now be the 3rd leading cause of death in the United States, claiming 251,000 lives every year, more than respiratory diseases, accidents, stroke, and Alzheimer's. Dr. Martin McCary, a professor of surgery at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine who led the research, said in an interview that the category includes everything from bad doctors to more systemic issues such as communication breakdowns when patients are handed off from one department to another. McCary said, "It boils down to people dying from the care they receive rather than the disease for which they are seeking care." His calculation of 251,000 deaths per year equates to nearly 700 deaths a day, equivalent to a jumbo jet crashing on a daily basis. And we surely would not put up with that, now would we? And get this, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention does not require reporting of medical errors in the data it collects about deaths through their billing codes, making it hard to see what's really going on at the national level. So 3rd leading cause of death? Maybe 2nd or 1st in reality. In fact, many months ago, I interviewed John James, the chief toxicologist at Nassau, whose son died of a medical error, now turned a patient activist, and he has results that show up to 450,000 people dying at the hands of medical errors per year. So in a decade, that comes to, what, 450 million people? And that's not counting those who don't manage to die and are seriously injured. Has our healthcare become better? Is Obamacare the panacea? Well, then enters big business. Monsanto has recently been successful in lobbying to cover up studies that link GMO corn with problems in kidney, liver, heart, adrenal glands, spleen functions. We've got big telecom. Independent, peer-reviewed studies that show that wireless radiation is hazardous to our health. Yet our hospitals, nursing homes, rehab facilities are blasting sick people, as well as unknowing staff, to death. Mandatory vaccines. Why? Because an industry that kills 450 million people in a decade deem they are safe. Why? Because big pharmacy wants it that way. Big media stays silent, and there we go, off into another topic for another show. I don't know. It may be time to get Borowitz, Horowitz, and no more of it's on the phone. When you're admitted to the hospital, it's important to know your status. Are you admitted as an inpatient or are you considered under observation? This bit of often secret information just might make a big difference to your wallet. Let's find out more from my friends at the Welsh Home in Rocky River. Listen as I spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner. Lauren, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good today, and I have a big question for you. How is your hospital admittance status tied to potential benefits and out-of-pocket costs?
When you're in the hospital, there are two different admission categories. You can either be inpatient or you can be an observation. People don't realize that there is a difference between inpatient and observation. People think if they've stayed there overnight, they're there for an extended amount of time, that they are automatically inpatient. We have seen people who have stayed in the observation status for 14 days, 15 days, and never were actually admitted to the hospital. The reason that you need to know the difference between these two things is your insurance benefit pays for your stay completely different when it comes to inpatient versus observation. When you are an inpatient, your insurance benefit covers much, much more of the stay than when you are in observation. The other reason that you need to know the difference between inpatient and observation is if you need to go to a facility after your hospital stay, that can play a huge role in how much your insurance will pay for that stay after the hospital.
All right, folks, you just heard a snippet about that. Be safe. Ask about your status each day you're in the hospital. And the folks at the Welsh Home know about these things and they can help you. And you don't have to be Welsh to ask for their help. Call them today to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. That's 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. The latest polls show that the majority of Americans do not approve of our current healthcare system. Rising rates, decreased quality for some, and less choice are all reasons that the public has voiced opposition to the current plan. And chances are you have been personally affected by the healthcare system in some way and are interested and invested in its improvement. But with such a complicated and often politically muddled topic, where does the average American turn for a straightforward explanation rooted in research and actual experience? Well, enter the book, The Human Face of Obamacare, Promises versus Reality, and What Comes Next, by respected and experienced physician, medical editor, health writer, and today's guest, Dr. John P. Guymon. John is Professor Emeritus of Family Medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle, where he served as chairman of the Department of Family Medicine from 1976 to 1990. He was the founding editor of the Journal of Family Practice from 1973 to 1990 and the editor of the American Journal of Family Medicine from 1990 to 2003. Since 1990, he has been fully involved with research and writing on health policy and healthcare reform. His latest book, released in January 2016, is The Human Face of Obamacare, Promises versus Reality, and What Comes Next. And flying is John's avocation, having been a pilot for 57 years. Now, as an active member of the United Flying Octogenarians, he flies patients from San Juan Island to and from the mainland for chemotherapy and radiation therapy. He is a member of the National Academy of Medicine, formerly the Institute of Medicine, and served as the president of Physicians for a National Health Program from 2005 to 2007. And he's here with us right now with lots to say about today's healthcare system. So welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Now, obviously, John, you have medical background, but what prompted you to write about our healthcare system?
This is my 60th year since I entered medical school at the University of California in San Francisco. And the system has changed so much, some for the good and some for the bad since then, that more and more, especially in the last 20 years, I've been very concerned about the unfairness of the healthcare system, how expensive it is. When you used to go to the physician back in the 60s and 70s, the first question that you would ask your patient is, how can I help you? Now, the first question you as a patient are asked is asked when you go to any office is, what insurance do you have? But the system has gotten very complex. Healthcare has become too expensive. There's no cost containment in sight. We had an attempt to reform the system in the 90s. The Clinton health plan, it was Byzantine in complexity. It never got out of a House committee in Congress. So then enter the Affordable Care Act. It's a misnomer. It has not made healthcare much more affordable. It's extended lots of subsidies to lots of people and expanded Medicaid. It's done some good things in terms of access, but no cost containment, no price controls. Drugs get more and more expensive. So for many people, health care is increasingly unaffordable. So anyhow, that's for starters.
Why did you title this particular book The Human Face of Obamacare?
Well, that's a good question, because I wanted to show what that legislation means in terms of people. And I took about 50 or more patient stories that illustrate the changes in the system since the Affordable Care Act was passed 6 years ago. For instance, a lot of people lost their insurance. It was canceled. A lot of people got insurance, but then their networks changed. And often docs don't always know they're in the network, yes or no. Networks can change very quickly. Another example is I have insurance, but then I lost it, or my employer cut back my insurance, or I don't. Some people figure they don't need insurance, especially younger, immortal people. Then a lot of people can't want insurance but can't afford the premiums. And then some people get on Medicaid, but Medicaid varies a lot by states, and so I have that as a patient story. Or I have insurance, but I lost my doc. I have insurance but can't find a doc. I have insurance, but its coverage is poor. I have insurance, but can't afford care anyhow. I had insurance, but went bankrupt anyhow. So those are examples of, I have patient stories that illustrate those very common situations. But essentially, it's been a bonanza for the insurance industry and the drug industry and other parts of the system.
Do you have maybe a quick story or two that exemplifies the promise versus reality?
Oh, yes. There were a lot of promises that were hyped up. President Obama said at one point that it would save the average family $2,500 to have this legislation. That's nowhere near true. There have not been savings. You know, there are so many unintended consequences, like how the insurer... private insurers have gamed the system. One way they game the system is to sell short-term policies that last less than a year, and those don't have to have to follow the requirements of the Affordable Care Act, and that's been a big marketing thing. That's been exposed just in recent days as kind of a scam. But they have lots of other ways of gaming the system, including always trying to select healthier patients and avoid sicker patients, et cetera.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that Obamacare is unsustainable, and now in the midst of this election year, there may be the opportunity to address this. So I have a two-part question. One is, what alternatives do we have to further reform our healthcare system? And number two, will it happen?
Two very good questions. And the answer, unfortunately, we don't know, and the answer depends on the politics. And we see in the current presidential election, we see the three main alternatives to change the financing system of healthcare. The first is to continue with the Affordable Care Act, and this is Hillary Clinton's position, and maybe tweak it a bit here and there, but basically thinking it's sound. Well, it isn't sound. The next is if the Republicans have their way after the election and what happens in Congress, they will repeal the ACA and replace it with a system they haven't really come forward with very much, except to say, I think what we would see is five or six or seven kinds of things that have been in place for years anyhow, such as consumer-directed health care. That's a euphemism where consumers control their own health care, which means they pay more at the start and have to decide if they really need to go to the doctor or the hospital. The GOP would push health savings accounts, be more responsible for your own care. They would push selling private insurance across state lines. Insurers game that by going to the states with the most lax requirements on the kind of insurance they can cover. And the Republicans talk about high-risk pools. Well, we've had those for years, and generally they run out of money because they attract the sicker people. So nothing the Republicans have in mind is going to work. And the third option is what Bernie is talking about, and Physicians for a National Health Program have urged for 20-plus years, namely single-payer, not-for-profit, national health insurance that covers everyone in the country in one big risk pool, 310 or 20 million people of us, with full benefit. This is true universal access. It would contain costs by having the government negotiate with hospitals and nursing homes and facilities what their budgets will be this coming year to cover everything they need, but without much simpler administration. It would have negotiated fees with docs and other health professionals. It would negotiate drug prices like the VA has done for 30 years. And it would be much more efficient. Traditional Medicare today, or no, for 50 years now, has run with an administrative overhead of about 2%. The private insurance industry, its overhead is huge. It's 18 or 20%. So, you know, just the simple change of financing to a single-payer system coupled with a private delivery system, hospitals would still be private, nursing homes would, docs would be in private practice, but docs would have much more time to practice medicine. They wouldn't have to check with 20 insurers about getting pre-authorization for this or that service, and et cetera. Be much simpler. There was a great study about 3 years ago now by Dr. Friedman. He's the chair of economics at the University of Massachusetts, and he studied the costs and the savings of national health insurance And he figures we would save $592 billion a year as soon as we enact national health insurance. $470-plus billion a year would be saved by knocking out the not needing the private insurance bureaucracy. We're paying almost double what other advanced countries do that have universal health care, and here we don't get anything like that. Hillary likes to talk in her campaign that, well, the ACA is a step towards universal health care, but it is not. That's just not true.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of not true, I think part of the problem is the education piece to the American public. We've got big media. So many people don't know that media is controlled by other big relationships such as Amazon and the Washington Post come to mind. And people seldom hear the truth and only what those in control want us to know. And we've got big pharma, we've got all of these bigs, and the consumer, I mean, the American public, we're now, people are stretched, they're working two jobs, come home, try to take care of the kids. The last thing they're going to try to do is try to decipher, what is the single payer system? What does that mean? They have no idea. Let's break this down a little bit, if you can, and be really basic. What is a single payer system and what is it not?
Well, first of all, in 1965, when we passed Medicare, that was a single payer system for people 65 years and older. It's a financing system, and we pay into it all our lives. And single-payer national health insurance would be for all of us, and we pay into it as we go through life. And 95% of Americans would end up paying less than we do now for insurance and for actual health care. So that's the big point. We are already paying much too much. There's no cost control on the horizon. The ACA will never do it, and it's just unsustainable. So single payer, we'd all have a card like seniors have a Medicare card today. When you go to the ER or the hospital or the physician's office, you show your card. You have to pay no deductibles, no co-pays at the point of service, because it's covered by a much more efficient system. So, and the delivery of care is in the private marketplace. And drug companies will have to compete against each other for a huge population if their drug is any good. That's the old-fashioned way. When Medicare was passed in 1965. I was in rural practice in Mount Shasta, California then. It was very simple administratively. We didn't have computers yet. We had just file cards. But it was very simple over 6 months. It was enacted really very easily. And this could be quite the same here. I met a person from the Netherlands last year, and he showed me his card. He could go anywhere in Europe and get health care for acute problems or whatever, and just on the basis of his card without payments at the front door. So this is achievable. It's been done by most other advanced countries in one form or another, namely single payer. And that includes much of Western Europe, Scandinavia, Canada, New Zealand, Taiwan even, Australia. We're paying too much and we're getting too little. Yes, it's very complex, but it could be simplified just by changing the financing of health. Mm-hmm.
And so the American public, then, they would be paying this, say, through payroll taxes?
Yes.
Okay. And then the provider gets paid through the system.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we're saying then that the amount that the person pays through payroll taxes is going to be noticeably less than what we're paying now.
Yeah. I have in front of me a progressive financing plan for national health insurance. The bill in Congress in the House has been for years H.R. 676, which is Medicare for All, improved Medicare for All.
Right.
And here is Dr. Friedman's method of doing that. there would be, he would put a tax on stock trades and transactions on Wall Street, a small tax. He'd have a 6% surtax on household incomes over $225,000. He'd have a 6% tax on property income from capital gains, dividends, interest, and profits. He'd have a 6% payroll tax on the top 60% with incomes over $53,000. He'd have a 3% payroll tax on the bottom 40% with incomes under $53,000, et cetera. So there's a real plan. Those are real numbers. And again, the main point, 95% of Americans would pay less than they are now for both insurance and care. They would have universal access to a comprehensive set of benefits, including dental care.
This is kind of a paradigm shift because I think the folks in our country don't necessarily believe that healthcare is a right. It's okay if you can afford it, then you have it. It's almost a mind shift that needs to happen here.
Well, yes, there are two ways of thinking about healthcare. One is that it's a privilege based on ability to pay. And the other is, which is actually the position of most of the civilized world and the World Health Association and all like that, that healthcare is a human right, and that we have some obligation as a society to provide that. As a physician, if someone comes in to me and they have an acute appendix, you know, it's not a matter of negotiating how much it'll cost for that care. That care has to happen now. So, and then you say, well, they can always go to the ER. Well, yes, we've had a law since the late 80s that patients going to the emergency rooms of hospitals have to be stabilized by law. But a lot of ERs now are charging very high prices, and some are being turned away, some patients for co-pays. Then the ER is not comprehensive care, and just try and get aftercare for patients without insurance or with a poor insurance policy or on Medicaid. A lot of docs in the country won't accept a new patient on Medicaid. So, you know, we have a very unfair and, I'm sorry, often inhumane system right now.
Well, clearly what's happening right now is not effective or efficient. It's not working for most people. So we need to give thought to this. And I know there's so much more to this discussion, but is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
No, I think we've covered a lot. People can go to my website, which is johngeimanmd.org, and get a lot more. They can go to the Physicians for a National Health Program website, which is pnhp.org. That's a very good website with very up-to-date information on the system and how single payer would work, but also the problems of the existing system. My latest book, which you mentioned at the start, The Human Face of Obamacare, I have downloaded the last three chapters on my website, so those can be available to people. And those last three chapters deal with the three alternatives we have to change how we finance healthcare. So we do have information available, and we have well-thought-out plans to reform the system. But the bottom-line problem, as you alluded to earlier, is the economic and political power of the corporate stakeholders in the status quo. Mm-hmm. They're making lots of money, the insurers and the medical device manufacturers and the drug industry, et cetera, from the Affordable Care Act. So they will be fighting national health insurance. On the other hand, it's inevitable that we will have to get there because the current system is unsustainable and will implode.
I think we can all agree with that. And so I'm going to encourage everyone listening today to empower ourselves and not take for granted that what we're hearing are in fact the true facts. And head over to John's website, johngeimanmd.org.
And it's G-E-Y-M-A-N-G as in George, so johngeimanmd.org.
John, thank you for sharing this candid conversation about a topic that touches every single person sooner or later. Healthcare today needs help, and it's only through the attention and the voice of the people can we make positive changes. I so appreciate your being here today. Thank you once again.
Well, thank you, Beth.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
It's summer, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to have some fun with your friends, your family, and there's only one place to do that. Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park, 10661 Kyle Road in Chardon, Ohio, 440-285-0910. Or visit the website, pioneerwaterland.com. See you there. Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio is proud to introduce our most recent sponsor, Zora Village Golf Course. Find out more at speakupandstayalive.com.
For years now, a lot of you have been driving down I-77 to play at Zora Village Golf Course. Thank you for the 40 years of support. And if you haven't been here, we'd like to invite you to come see why we've been called a must-play course for Northeast Ohio golfers. Superintendent Eric Crone's greens are always stellar, too. The pro shop is stocked and the snack bar features great food. Check us out at ZorVillageGolf.com.
Welcome to a new day and Breakfast with Bob. Listen in as Bob and I break the fast with random yet useful chit-chat about, oh, I don't know, whatever comes to mind. Good morning, Bob. What's that crunching? I'm hoping that you're not eating genetically modified cornflakes. Bob? Those aren't genetically modified cornflakes, are they? By now, nearly everyone interested in healthy living is aware that recent research links Monsanto's genetically modified corn to cancer tumors and an increased risk of premature death in both men and women. In fact, Bob, according to the Center for Food Safety, up to 85% of the corn grown in the United States is genetically modified. And this means that corn-based cereals that use non-organic corn have a very high likelihood of containing genetically modified corn. So, what's in your bowl, Bob?
I'll guarantee you what's in my bowl isn't genetically modified. It's a organic cereal, and I'm not about to eat the genetically modified stuff.
You're a good boy. So, Bobby, have you recovered from the car ride to North Carolina yet?
It's hard to recover after seeing what we saw. You know, I mentioned it to you in the car. It just blew my mind to see, knowing what I know about radiation, how the American people have been so duped, you might say, by the wireless industry. Just in a matter in Statesville, North Carolina alone, in a matter of a half mile, I counted 7 cell phone towers, and that blew my mind.
I mean, because really, you're in this tiny little town, couple of farms, like 3 people live there. Why do they need 7 cell towers?
Well, the only thing I can say from what we've been researching, what I've noticed, they're going to make sure that NSA is going to be able to track you no matter where you're at with cell phones. They don't need 7 towers. Just think, whoever has their fingers on the switch, all they have to do is flip that switch up a little bit higher, and you're going to really affect a lot of people physically.
Well, nobody has to flip a switch. Just driving through with that acoustimeter that I have just shows you how high the radiation levels are. I mean, it's like sitting in a microwave oven. And, you know, I asked you this on the way, and I still have this question. You've got these farmers that are selling out. Obviously, big telecom is paying them to lease their land to put these cell towers on. But here's the question. What right does a individual farmer have now to radiate his fellow farms or the people that are driving down the turnpike or the freeway? We're all getting zapped because this guy decides that he wants to, you know, make a couple thousand dollars a month or whatever the heck they get paid. And now the rest of the society has to suffer for it. We're going to get to the point somewhere where we're going to maybe put these people on notice and send them a legal notice that says, you know what, if something happens to my animals, to my family, if I get sick, we're looking at you. Because now we are living under this plume of radiation.
It's an accumulative effect. These people don't realize they're getting zapped. It's going to take time for it to accumulate. But here's the thing. The wireless industry is immune from getting sued. But that doesn't mean the farmers aren't immune to being sued, or the people in the public utilities are immune to being sued, the townships being sued, because they're not part of that. This is only the wireless industry that's going to be able to be taken care of, so they don't get sued.
But here's the thing where, sadly, I think what you're saying is not going to happen, because the FCC has guidelines that they've set, and they're extremely high and out of whack guidelines that are based on thermal heating. They're saying, well, you know, if the cell phone tower won't burn you, then it's safe. So everybody's immune because all they do is point to the FCC and say, we're following FCC guidelines.
They may be following FCC guidelines, but that doesn't mean the accumulative effect doesn't catch up with you. You know, Pat, I was driving home today from playing golf, and I was listening to the radios, and the little announcer came on there, and she said, you know, there's been a survey run that the average person that has a cell phone spends more time on that cell phone per day than they do sleeping. That's got to affect you.
Well, yeah, I think I read about that study. I think it was a study in Britain, and they said the big rise of it was due to the smartphones and the iPads because it's more accessible.
Well, that's true. It may be accessible, but people don't understand. They need to really start looking close. They need to actually have protests for this, and I'd like to see somebody start protest. Our congressmen aren't doing anything. They're clueless. They don't research anything. They just pass something because the lobbyists say it's good. Well, don't pass it if you don't research it.
So what are you doing today, Bob? Why don't you start something?
I am. I'm going to go out and weed eat because I've got to clean the yard up. Somebody threw a beer can in my front yard and I got to pick it up.
He was probably talking on his cell phone, didn't realize what was doing.
Well, Patty, if you don't care, I'm going to let you get back to work. We've enjoyed the breakfast. We'll have another breakfast here real soon. But I'll let you get back to work so I can go out and get this weed eating done because it's outgrowing me. I'm going to cut the grass too, so we'll do both.
All right, Bobby, it's always fun to have breakfast with you. Hope you have a good day.
This was really great, and I enjoyed it very much.
Well, my friends, another show leaving us with lots to think about, and that is important. We may not always have the answers, and we may not always agree with what others think and say, but as long as we ask the questions, as long as we continually ask questions, seek answers, hopefully that will lead to end results that make sense, that work. Healthcare today is topsy-turvy and downright unsafe at times. Please be your own advocate and allow yourself to speak up. And part of feeling comfortable enough to speak up comes through knowledge. Let me share some of what I know with you. Get a copy of my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. Not because I wrote it, but because of why I wrote it, to help you and others avoid what we learned the hard way. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com or call me and order by phone, 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And while you're at the website, check out all of the pages.
Learn about the dangers electromagnetic frequencies given off by cell phones, cell towers, smart meters, and get yourself a small handheld meter so you can make the invisible visible. They're available at our website. Check out the page that talks about our speaking events and view some of the venues that have invited me to speak. The Cleveland Clinic, pharmacy associations, nurses associations, all the way to women's groups, senior groups, libraries, Kiwanis, Rotary. If you have people, you need me. Call me for the few details. 440-725-5462. And continue to join me for this radio program every week. Same time, same place, but you know me. Never the same information. Until next week, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week, free from crepey skin and medical malpractice commercials. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Speak Up and Stay Alive. Five simple words that address a complex problem, and that is your safety when it comes to every healthcare or hospital encounter, or the safety of your family and friends. These words need to be in your mind and on your lips. And to help with that, I wrote the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Hospital Survival Guide, on the recommended reading list of the U.S. Army's Medical Department Office of Quality Management. And it should be on your reading list too. Get a copy for yourself. Give some away as important gifts. Bring the book to the hospital with you. Lay it on the tray table. Now, without saying a word, everyone knows that you are an e-patient, equipped, and eager to get out unharmed. You can purchase online for only $19.95 at the website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call me and order by phone, 440-725-5462. That's speakupandstayalive.com or 440-725-5462. Speak Up and Stay Alive. The book tells you how, and I hope you do.